Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
Welcome everyone to another episode of Spark Your Fire Podcast. It's Jazz here doing the opening for the first time, or maybe it's actually second time, trying to steal the show away from David a little bit. David, are you there?
I'm here, mate, as always. You know, like, I know what you're trying to do, but it's okay. I thought we'll mix up things a little bit, just so that everyone get to hear Jazz this time.
But David, we have got an interesting chapter to discuss today, haven't we?
Yeah, mate, always. Like, I've got lots of interesting topics, but I thought today's topic is quite relevant in terms of the current investing environment, I guess, because, you know, for most people, we haven't seen what's currently like this, you know, the low interest rate environment, the economic instability, which Steve talks about a lot in a couple of episodes before. But then I thought, you know, this is actually quite relevant in terms of where we are right now.
Yeah, no, last episode was, I think Steve's episode was the last episode that we published.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that was pretty intense. I mean, for listeners who actually have listened to that previous podcast, Steve has been pessimistic for the last 10 years. Now, I'm not saying that Steve is wrong. He's an economist, obviously. He's a well-renowned economist. But I will take it with a bit of grain of salt, to be honest. And we were discussing this just before jumping on the recording, David, right? So it's good to have both sides of the story. I mean, we are very positive always about property, and we hope it will keep performing in the future as an asset class. But at the same time, it's good to bring people's opinion, other people's opinion, who have got a completely different view on it.
That's right. It's, I think it needs to be a bit of balance. You know, we can't always say property is going to be the best, and you know, it's never going to do bad, or you know, in that respect. So it's good to be able to have different opinions onto the show, just to, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinions. And that's why I thought, you know, that's where actually people can see from various angles, rather than just, you know, one angle as per se, and which I thought, you know, that's on that note, it kind of makes sense for us to talk, lead into what our topic is for today, which I thought, you know, you're in the other asset class, which is cryptocurrency a fair bit. And I thought it would be interesting for you to share with our audiences today in terms of how the current crypto market's doing. And at the same time, we can also talk a bit about property and make it like a bit of a property versus crypto comparison in the current environment. Which one is the better asset to move into?
Well, see, I've got a love affair with both of them, so both of them are good asset classes.
Hey, that's a bit biased. I'm going to have to push you towards the crypto side because I have no idea about crypto. Otherwise, this fight's never going to go on, right?
let's dig into this, right? Let's dig into this. So where do we get started? I'll start first because we have been discussing property, right? So let's start with crypto. What is crypto, first of all, right? Crypto started with a thing called Bitcoin, right?
Bitcoin, yep.
And the Bitcoin white paper, not the actual product, but the white paper came out in 2008, just when we were at the height of GFC, global financial crisis. So this angel came out of somewhere. No one has actually seen this person. Name is Satoshi Nakamoto. Mm-hmm. And he dropped a white paper which talked about a peer-to-peer digital cash currency, which is not controlled by any central party, which is the government or the central banks or the Federal Reserve. And the reason he released that white paper just during the GFC time was because people's trust was lost at that time. Right?
For the traditional asset classes you're talking about because of the GFC?
Correct. So a lot of the banks lost the money of the retirees. Lehman is your perfect example, Lehman Brothers. Right?
Yep.
So that trust was lost somewhere, and due to the trust being lost, came out a solution out of that was blockchain, with Bitcoin being the cryptocurrency. And blockchain essentially is trustless ledger. It's immutable. It is... You can go through the history of all the transactions that have happened in the entire history of the crypto, Bitcoin. Mm. So it's essentially an immutable, trustless way to transfer money peer-to-peer without involving any central bank or third parties, essentially.
Right. Yeah, so it's a peer-to-peer. I think the concept here is peer-to-peer, not going through any central institution as per se, isn't it?
That's the most important thing, right? So you don't have to trust any central. So if you've got money sitting in your bank and you think the bank is going to collapse for whatever reason, or that your money is not safe over there because they can shut your account, they can block it, or whatever else, it can get hacked, whatever it might be, right? With this, you are full in charge of your own money when it comes to crypto, right? So anyways, so without going too much into the details of that, it came out in 2008, right? So this asset class or Bitcoin itself was the very first one. And since then, there has been roughly about 2,000 other cryptocurrencies. And you can go to CoinMarketCap for that, coinmarketcap.com, and check out all the other cryptocurrencies over there. So there's roughly about 2,000 cryptocurrencies. It's been roughly 10 years into the journey.
Okay, so it's got 10 years of history, and everyone have got access to see the full 10 years history of each and every type of different cryptocurrency. Is that correct?
Correct. So the different cryptocurrencies offer different benefits. Like some of them are actually privacy coins like Monero, Zcash and all, where you actually cannot see what has been done on the blockchain because it's a privacy coin. So people don't want you to know what money they're transferring and who they are transferring to. But then there are other open blockchains like Bitcoin and Ethereum and Litecoin and a few others that where the transactions, you can just go and check the transactions essentially all the way from the start to the end.
So you can see each and every transaction that people have made.
Correct.
Full visibility.
Wow. Correct. Or in the blockchain language, full node. And you can actually download the full node and run it on your computer. And it gives you full track of the transactions that you are performing, or if you know the keys of the other person who has transferred you the money or where you've received the money from, you can essentially go and look at the history of the whole transaction. So in another way, if you forget the cryptocurrency for a second, the other thing that blockchain, which is what the cryptocurrency runs on, offers you is a solution to track the asset itself, right? So let's say if you're importing expensive wine from Australia to, I don't know, America, right?
Yep.
It's trustless nature and it's immutable database. You can actually verify whether it is that bottle of wine or the barrel of wine that you have sent to another country, whether it's the legit one or not, to avoid any...
So that's the authenticity. You can ensure the integrity of the actual product.
Yes, the integrity of the actual product. So that's the other thing, that the other benefit that blockchain offers, which to some extent applies to the currency as well.
Yeah. So it all operates on private key and public keys and all that, right? So I think it's all security in the back end. Platform.
Correct. You're spot on that, David. So individuals have their own private key. If you lose the private key, you lose the money. Simple as that. So this is not insured. It's non-sovereign money. It's not insured like your money sitting in the banks. So in case if you lose the keys or if you accidentally transfer it to someone, some wrong person, then you've lost that money, basically.
Or if someone was able to hack into your private key, then essentially they will got full access to all your cryptocurrencies.
Spot on. So
it's like someone's able to get your IDs and be able to authenticate themselves to the bank to try to act on your behalf.
100%. 100%. And this is not insured at all, which means you can lose all of that money. So, but the other side of the story is that it is in your full control. No one can take it away from you either. So it's got both positives and negatives, right? So that's the interesting part.
That's good. I think as a crypto. I mean, for those audiences who don't know, Jazz is actually also running another podcast called Crypto Babble, and he's one of the hosts there as well, which is why he's very knowledgeable to speak in this area, that's for sure. and it's for, you know, it would be good to give our audiences a bit of a dose of knowledge here in terms of what the cryptocurrency is and a bit of fundamentals about it. But what made it so unique in a sense, like why would people, as you said, you know, back in 2008, when everything else, when the traditional asset classes collapsed,
Yep.
And that's when is that a strategic move from the original person or the author, I should say, the father who gave birth to Bitcoin? Is that strategically released around that time because he or she can already see that at this point in time, the market needs another type of asset which is more bulletproof?
I mean, there is no definite confirmation on that. But if logic was to be applied, it came out at the height of GFC, right?
Yeah.
And 2009 was the first block that was mined on Bitcoin blockchain. So you will say that the only reason, and actually if you read the white paper, it sort of talks about a currency which is essentially a store of value but can be transported over a communication channel. So store of value, you can call property a store of value. You can call gold maybe is the best example of a store of value, right? But the thing is they can't be transported over the internet, right?
Yes.
So this whole new technology that came out can actually be transported over the internet, which means if you are in South Africa or India or China, wherever you are, right, I can essentially transfer you in real time the money without involving any central parties, and we can both verify that we have sent and received that that currency, essentially, in this case, whether it's Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum, whatever it might be.
Okay, so it's not bound by geographic means, as to say, and as long as the buyer and the seller is there and there's a demand for it, then the transaction can happen.
The key is if there's demand for it, and the second is how stable it is, right?
Yeah.
So that becomes the other question. So completely different from property. The thing with crypto is that it's a very liquid, obviously, like shares kind of thing.
Yes. Yep.
But it doesn't have much history at all, which means it can essentially go down to zero.
Last 10 years. It's had 10 years of history so far, 10 years. Yep.
10 years of history without any commercial use case so far. Right?
What do you mean by commercial use case?
Well, by commercial use case, I mean some of these cryptos have been tried as a means of payment at various e-commerce retail platforms.
Yep.
And that hasn't really worked out very well.
Okay. I think that was the original intention, isn't it? Is to have a different type of universal currency that people can buy goods and services from using Bitcoin as the actual currency rather than check or cash they currently have, as to remove that limitation for global trades. Was that the original intention of how Bitcoin was to be used?
Well, I think the original intention, if we go back to the white paper that was released by Satoshi, it's the original purpose was purely to remove the trust out of the system, right?
Okay. Okay.
At the moment where you park your money in the banks, right? Banks can shut your account tomorrow, right?
Yes.
We saw that with India recently doing demonetization where people lost their currency overnight, right? We have seen that with Argentina. I was reading an article where a chap who's 30 years old has seen his wealth from his family wiped three times just because of the currency going worthless, right? So this is a 30-year-old in Argentina. And then plus we know about other countries as well. Whether it's some in Asia, whether it's Venezuela, Iraq, Iran, whatever it might be, right? It's basically removing the trust out of the system. That was the whole purpose of it. Saying why do we have to trust a third party? Why it cannot just be decentralized distributed ledger, which can be verified. It's essentially a math. It's a math algorithm, which can't be faked. It's got a limited supply, which is, I think, with Bitcoin specifically, it's got 21 million. With Litecoin, it's about 81 million or 85 million, I think. Ethereum is much more. And depending upon which cryptocurrency you're talking about, but the other thing was is the one of the things that Steve discussed in the previous episode, Steve Keen, the economist, is we probably will see QE, quantitative easing, next year, whether it's in Europe or whether it's in Japan or whether it's in America, maybe in Australia, right? That's what he said, which means your currency loses value straight away.
Correct, yeah.
Or more inflation, right? So whereas
they can print infinite money.
Spot on. So there's no restriction on it. So whereas the cryptocurrency, on the other hand, specifically mentioning maybe Bitcoin, Litecoin, and few others, they are more deflationary. So the current, if you look at the current supply of Bitcoin, I think every 10 minutes, it's producing 12.5 new coins every 10 minutes.
Okay.
And that's going to be cut into half next year.
Right. So they can, so they basically control the amount of Bitcoin that they produce.
It's not, control is probably not the right word. It's a map, it's an algorithm, right? You,
you
both have ID backgrounds, right?
Yep.
It's an algorithm that has been written.
Yep.
It cannot be changed. If you change it, it becomes a new currency, right? So you cannot change the actual math behind the algorithm. And at the moment, it says 21 million. You can fork it, which means you can create your own coin called, let's say, David coin or Jazz coin.
Mm.
But and you can give it more supply or less supply, but then that's not Bitcoin itself, right?
Okay.
So, yeah, so that's the thing. Okay. That's,
so it becomes a separate entity by itself.
Exactly. So it becomes a separate entity of its own, and whether it's worth something or not, only the people of the world will decide, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So just to clarify, so the Bitcoin is still expanding. In other words, it's still increasing based on the algorithm that was originally written, and that was kind of just like locked down from a very simple perspective. So it's still producing. So in the sense, it's still like QE. You know, you are printing, but you are printing money, or you are printing Bitcoin, but in a very, very controlled fashion, and it's very slow. That's what you're saying. So the supply is definitely increasing over time, but the demand, which is what we're trying to work out the other side, you know, whether there is demand or not, that will determine its actual value.
So the supply is not increasing. The supply will actually, there's a market supply. Right, and then there is how much more of it is left. So there's roughly about 21, specifically talking about Bitcoin, there's roughly about 21 million, right?
Okay, yep.
17 or 18 million roughly has already been mined, which means they are out in circulating in the market right now.
Okay, yep.
And there's roughly about 3-4 million left.
Okay. Yeah. So you're saying that it's capped at 21 mil and there won't be any more than 21 mil of Bitcoin?
Not Bitcoin. You can fork the coin and make it something else, but for Bitcoin, it'll be 21 million.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. All right. Okay. So the supply will be limited. In other words, there will be a cap, unlike QE, where you can print infinite number of cash. Okay.
So this is not an inflationary asset. It's actually a deflationary asset because the supply gets cut in half every 4 years. Whereas with the fiat money or Australian dollar, American, whatever it is, we can keep printing it, and we can keep changing the inflation numbers, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that's the big difference.
Okay. Which then brings an interesting question then. Then why would it be a good asset class to invest in, apart from the fact that it's deflationary?
That's a good point, actually. So why is it a good asset class to invest in? Let me ask you a question to answer the question, right? Why is property a good asset class?
Okay, well, you know, first of all, I guess property's got a long history in terms of how its performance is being made. You know, you can certainly see the trend for the last 25 years. It has made a solid performance in that sense. Second point, as an asset class, look, property, it's brick and mortar. You can feel that. You can see it. It's physically there. It doesn't disappear. Slightly different to the virtual currencies that we're talking about here.
Yep.
Coming to a very basic fundamental view, everyone needs a place to live. So, you know, there is always going to be demand for a property, because people need shelter, food, and water. So the shelter part is an important part of it. So, you know, in that sense, and it's very basic, it's a very fundamental asset class. And because there's always going to be more demand However, to a certain degree, there's only going to be limited supply because there's only going to be limited land overall. So therefore, unless they keep building up, which is what they're trying to do in major capital cities by building apartments rather than spreading out horizontally.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it will be. So that's why, you know, as an asset class, people have been, because of the fact that they need somewhere to live. So, yes, they will have to buy a house unless they rent. So, and there's always going to be people needing more houses to be built. And as a consequence of the last 25 years, the prices has been continuously going up.
So I think the first point to completely be agreed upon is it's got a long history, which this new asset class doesn't have, right? We don't even, it could be, there's a non-zero chance that it can go down to zero, essentially.
Yes.
Right? So cannot argue on that point at all. So property by far beats that. Right, it has got up full on history.
Yep.
In terms of the land itself, if you're living in a good country like Australia, land itself being limited, true to some extent. If you're in Melbourne or in Sydney, there's a limited supply. If you look at certain pockets which are in high demand, right?
Yep.
Can that apply to cryptocurrency as well? Essentially, Bitcoin has got a limited supply. Some of the other coins have got a limited supply, right? Does that mean that you can fire up a new coin tomorrow? Of course you can. It takes you probably a day or two. You can. It's an open source code. You can fork it, and you've got a new coin, which means the supply limited or not is questionable, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's debatable whether the supply is limited or not, right?
Yeah.
But the argument to be made to be devil's advocate, which is in this case Bitcoin's advocate, is that if you change the code, then it's a new currency. It's not.
It's become something else. It's a separate entity by itself.
Exactly. Whether it will work or not, no one knows, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Thirdly, property itself has got a good use case that, like you said, it's a shelter, right? People want to know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does cryptocurrency provide any true use case? If we were to take that analogy, probably not. I mean, it's more of a thing which you are betting on. Essentially, it's that this could be something in the future. It could become a global reserve currency. It could become a settlement layer. It could become a payment mechanism, whatever it might be. Right.
Yeah.
It probably the interesting shifting the topic a little bit without going too much into detail of that. But why does gold has value, David?
Why does gold has value?
Right. Gold. If you look at the gold market cap today, it's $8 trillion. The only reason it has got value is because you and I believe that this is a property that can be exchanged. It's the belief system that it carries, right? That you can take it to a shop, a gold shop, and you can get cash.
You can basically get value out of it. Basically, exchange it for value.
Yeah. So, but it's a belief system that over the last like property, it's got gold has got its history, going back whatever centuries, decades, whatever you're gonna say it. Can cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, Litecoin have something similar? You can say probably there's a good chance it can because it's native to the internet. Whereas gold back in the days when there was no internet or limited internet, it made more sense at the time. Whereas these days you want to be able to transport something over a communication channel faster. Yep. We live in a connected world. Does cryptocurrency offers that? I think it does. So whether it will succeed or not, that's questionable. A lot of the banks lately have come up with their own blockchains, right? So they're firing up their own coins. We saw Facebook announce a couple of weeks ago the Libra project. So there's another one that's coming out. Which one will be successful? Which one won't be? Whether the space will live or die? It's all questionable, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so it hasn't got that proven track record in the past. At this point in time, still fairly new in terms of an asset class player in comparison to the old traditional asset classes like property, shares, gold, that kind of stuff. But having said that, because of the technology improvement over a period of time, over the, especially the internet, you know, we're moving into a new digital world, and as such, you know, this as being, this is being treated as a potential asset class moving forward, even though it's only got about 10 years history from the date the white paper was released. It's currently being looked at as an alternative asset class, you know, from apart from the traditional ones, as far as I can see.
Definitely. So it's a very new nascent asset class, and there's a lot of scams running in this space as well at the same time. Anything new that comes out, it's not regulated. So we saw in 2017, people went crazy. There were so many ICOs initial coin was offering. None of them had any product behind the scenes.
Just, it's called just, ICOs, is it?
Yeah, initial coin offering. That's what it's called.
Okay. Not like IPO. So I was thinking about IPO. Yeah, so ICO. Okay.
Yeah. IPO actually is a company that is that's got revenue. In this case, ICOs only had a white paper. Right. And they raised quite a few billion. And a lot of them were clear scams. And they probably still listed on the coin market. No product. So if you are investing in cryptocurrency, or if you're thinking of investing in cryptocurrency, you just have to be super careful. Every other asset class, when you invest in property, you want to stay away from the mining towns and other areas where there's crime and all that stuff, right? And a lot of scammy projects in the property market as well, like we see that with some of the developers.
Yes,
they do, right? So it's just, but property is very regulated. Share market is very regulated. Gold market is very regulated. This is open slather. You can make gains, 100x, 200x, 300x gains in a day, and you can lose all that money in an hour. It's that simple. Right.
Because of the fact that it's not regulated. So
it's exactly, and it's all
open to manipulation. And speculation.
Exactly. Spot on. It's all open to manipulation. It's all open speculation. There is no clear future exactly on it yet of what it's going to be and why it's there, right? It more sort of started as a collectible thing, then became a speculation. Now it's becoming a store of value. What will happen? But the thing is, any new product that comes out in the market will always offer you higher returns because there's a higher risk attached to it, right?
Yes.
So property, we know, over the long term, if you give it 10 to 15 years, even if you bought it expensive, it's a forgiving asset class. You will normally, unless you buy it in a mining town or something, then that's a separate story. But if the fundamentals stack up, it's a forgiving asset class. Even if you buy it a little expensive, give it a few years, you will recover your money, right?
Yeah.
This one is not. A lot of them are
crypto, stacked. Isn't it? So it could end up in a bloodbath. And
exactly.
Couldn't get yourself out of it, basically lose everything.
And we have seen that with people who invested the money in the crypto space in year 2016-17 or 2017, Jan 2018, to be precise, they lost 90% or 80 to 90% of their money, essentially, because it dropped.
Wow.
And about 99% of the projects were scams. 99% of the projects were scams, right? But then there's, at the same time, that's the negative side, right? But if you truly do your research work and study these projects, and that requires a lot of time to be spent,
like every asset class, basically.
Exactly. And also have the, but in this space, there's relatively less good resources to reach out. It's growing very fast, but there's relatively less good resources to listen to reach out to get the information. But it's changing. It's changing fast, right?
Okay.
So we'll see what happens. But you cannot really compare these two. I mean, the property is proven record, right, for the people who are trying to build a safe nest egg, right?
Yes.
They are after 5-6% returns year after year or over the period of time.
That's right. It's not gonna go to zero overnight.
Exactly. Even if you take the Steve Keen's case, which is very pessimistic case, right? Even if you were to take that and say, you know what, the property market will collapse by 40%. We have already seen a 15% collapse, right? But still, if you can hold on to it, and it's paying itself for the most part of it, you'll probably end up doing fine in that space.
That's right.
The chances of burning yourself completely are very minimal unless you really go out into the some of those mining towns and all, like we said, right? Crypto is exactly the opposite of that. The chances of of burning yourself are 100% there unless you really do your homework, right? So it's not for average punter. You need to know what you're doing in this space. It goes up and down like a
roller coaster ride. I heard it could change significantly in an hour. That's how quickly
it drops 30% in an hour, and it goes up 300x in like 3 days. So there's a lot of manipulation happening in this space right now. You just have to study all the projects. But the thing is, one thing I will say is the asset class crypto itself is here to stay. Which ones will be successful, which ones won't be successful, that's anyone's best guess, right? Yep. Far too early to say.
Time will tell.
Like I said, if you look at I think the news was out only 2 or 3 days ago. One of the other major banks is launching their own crypto coin in America. Was it Wells Fargo or JP Morgan? One of those, I forgot. And when you look at that, then you go, if the banks are doing their own blockchain, and then you also have got is the Facebook-like companies launching their own coin, right? And all of these are talks up in the air. There's no real project just yet, right?
Yep.
Outside of the main one where it all got started, which is the Bitcoin itself, it's hard to say which one will be successful and which one won't be. But the asset class is here to stay. It needs more time to grow, essentially. It's only, we are talking, what's the market cap of property in Australia? We're talking 7 trillion roughly, right? 7 to 8.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
The crypto market all up, including all the coins, is under 250 billion, right?
Okay.
Exactly. You look at the gold as an asset class, that itself is 8 trillion, right?
Yeah.
So, this is too small for anyone to right now guess what it's going to be, but
that's too young at this point.
Exactly, too young. But that's one side of the story. At the same time, that also creates a lot of opportunities for the risk takers, the ones who want to take the risk, study the projects, and invest their money in it. It could go down to zero, or it could go multiple X.
Take your punt and see. Do your research and take a punt.
Do your research and take the punt. It sounds to me.
A question though.
Yeah, sure.
You know how you talk about there's basically. We have investment principles and property. Are there any investment principles for Bitcoin?
Well, you mean Bitcoin or crypto in general?
I use Bitcoin and crypto as a bit of a
crypto language.
Say crypto. Let's say crypto.
Are there any basic fundamentals? There are. I'm just trying to think of the answer. In short, there are no as such basic fundamentals to look for, to be honest, right?
So there's no global principles like, for example, avoid mining towns, avoid places with high rental vacancies, avoid high unemployment areas, things like that. A bit of a generic principle.
Not really, to be honest. What I will say is just stick to if you really want to dig into the space, maybe just stick to the top 10, 20 coins in the coin. If you look at the coin market cap, stick to the top 10, 20, right? Because anything after the 20th, 99.9% is probably going to be a scam.
Okay. Because they're too small. They're just new. They're startups. And they're much more of a chances to be a scam.
Yeah, a lot of them are actually scams, and a lot of them are pure experiments, right? But there are no real fundamentals that apply. So but what does get applied is there's few different things. One is the store of value, which more looks like Bitcoin is the one heading in that direction. And then second is the decentralized web platform. It's essentially trying to rebuild the whole the way the web works currently, internet. And some of the ones that play in that space that are big ones are Ethereum, EOS, Cardano is coming out soon, and there's a few more, but they are the main names, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can look at the payment side, which is the which ones will become the actual payment processors or get used more on a daily basis for making payments. And that would be likes of Litecoin or something else. Which one do you bet on and what return do you get? God knows, man. It could go down to zero. and the thing is, because this industry is not really that regulated at this point. Yes, there are AML and KYC rule that applies to the exchanges, but as such, the industry is not that regulated. So when the regulators come and with a stick, which ones are going to survive, which ones aren't, no one knows. With the only exception probably being is the Bitcoin, because it is totally decentralized.
So you're saying regulation is actually coming its way to Bitcoin? To cryptocurrencies.
To cryptocurrency, yes. It's coming and it's coming fast. It being a new technology, it's trying to take a shape, and you cannot put regulation on something when you don't know what shape it's going to take. Yes. So you had to wait for that to happen first to see where it goes and then regulate it accordingly. China did put restrictions around it. Singapore did put restrictions around it, right? So, but being its nature, it being decentralized, what's happened is some of these companies like Binance is a well-known name in the crypto space. It's an exchange. China banned them. They went to Singapore. Singapore banned them. They went to Malta, which is a small island. So you cannot stop it, essentially, right? So and the regulators, to some extent, have, or the government, to some extent, has given up on some of this, specifically being Bitcoin, that there is no one central office that you can go to and stop it, right? And the fact is that it can be mined from your laptop. Well, not anymore. In the past, it could be, but there's big mining farms these days, right? Anyone can run a full node. So essentially, some parts of it will get regulated, and some of them just cannot be done because of its global nature or the decentralized nature. And the ones that will get regulated are the on-ramps, which is when you're trying to jump from your traditional finance world, which is your Aussie dollar, USD, fiat, through the exchanges to buy these crypto assets. Those are the parts that are actually getting regulated.
Right, okay.
Where they're asking for a lot more questions around who you are, what forms of savings do you have, and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
So they're trying to regulate from that perspective to avoid as much crime as they can. Because once you are in the crypto land, it's open. You can do whatever you want. But they're restricting the path, or they're putting more regulations on the path to get there.
That's
regulated.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, look, I think I will have to ask you that difficult question, because you said initially I like to put people on spot. What do you think in next 2 years, how much crypto would have gained in the next 2 years as a percentage?
Let's say, at the moment, if we were to quantify it, it's hardly any, because the market cap, as I said, was 220 billion, right?
Yep.
220, 250 billion, around that.
Yep.
My guess, if I was to, and this is not a financial advice, don't listen to me. This is just having some fun here. there is a possibility it reaches the market cap of 2 trillion before it drops again.
Okay.
So 2 trillion is what? Almost 10x from here.
10x. So 10 times is what you're saying. In 2 years' time, it could grow 10 times of the current value.
Yes, that's right. Okay. In next 2 to 3 years, 3 years is the max. Is the max, I'll say. 2 is the minimum, right? But at the same time, this could also go down to zero.
Come on, you need to make a punt. So you're saying it's 10 times in 2 to 3 years or zero in 2 to 3 years?
The important point to make it is that it can go down to zero. Keep that in mind, right? So you can make 90% of your money. But out of the 2 trillion market cap, which ones will actually be the winners? We'll see. Time will tell. But the market cap should reach around that point, because there's new players coming in the space like Facebook, Libra, and like all the other banks that are forming their own blockchains and all. And there's some new other, some new decentralized finance exchanges that are cropping up and all, that are running on the Ethereum blockchain and some of the other new platforms. Mm. So which one will be the winner? No one knows. But will we see a run up in the next 2 to 3 years? We will, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I'm sure we'll provide more updates in a year or two, because you know, just for our listeners, if any time that Jas left the podcast, you know what has happened. He's made his billionaires, and he's now sipping his cocktails in a very unique island. That's for sure. So, you know, if someday that you didn't hear from him, that's probably what happened. So, yeah, we always joke about this. So,
that's more of a fun thing.
All right, any other words of wisdom in terms of crypto versus property that you'd like to pass on?
Not words of wisdom. What I'll say is, I mean, property, if we have been discussing about property for the last 60 episodes now, or sorry, 30 episodes now, 35. And all I'll say is, probably if you really want to get your hands dirty in the crypto space, don't just go and bet the farm on it. Maybe whatever money you spend on coffee, $3, $10, whatever it is a day, maybe just take that chump change and put it into one of the assets, crypto assets. Mm-hmm. And try and play around with it to just understand what it is and whether it makes sense or not. Yep. But don't just go and bet the farm on it unless you know what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think the key lessons here, or the key message that you have here, is you know, it needs to be your discretionary money, in that sense that you could lose it, and it's something that you're willing to lose completely. And if it's not, then don't do it.
Spot on. If you cannot afford to lose the money,
yeah,
don't go and use your credit cards to buy these assets. Don't sell your house to buy these assets. But if you have got spare money sitting around, whatever it is, $10,000-$20,000, just go and have a little bit of fun, see what comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Start small. Cool. Yeah. All right. Well,
but nothing beats property. Property is always the first of fear.
Absolutely. I think they're just very different type of asset classes. So, you know, as you said, you can't really compare the two. But having said that, you know, I reckon give cryptocurrency a few more years, and we might, and also with the fact that regulations will come in place slowly, we might see a bit more stability, or we might see how the nature of this cryptocurrency asset class is going to play out. You know, when we reach maybe the 5 or even 10, when we reach the 20 or even 30 year mark, just to give it a bit more time, and you never know what's going to happen.
I definitely think it's got a long way to go, a few years. Yep. One good thing about it is that all the smart brains are in this space now, trying to make something out of it. What will come out outside of the speculation that's currently there, it's hard to say. But at the moment, it's just speculation, nothing else.
Exactly. All right, well, I think that's a good wrap for today. For the listeners, I hope you all enjoyed today's show. If you like this show, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Google or iTunes or whatever application that you're currently listening. Spread the word like fire. Spark your fire. We'll see you next time. Jas and David, bye.
Yeah.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.